Good afternoon and welcome. It's good to see everybody here. We are going to, if I get a clicker, which if all everybody over here got to see the little leg flip, that's embarrassing. We're going to finish up the series on artifacts that matter. And this is the seventh lesson in that. And that entire time, I never remembered to ask somebody to get the lights for me beforehand. So Rob, if you can do that, thank you. So, as you might recall, back in 2015, Bonnie and I went to British Museum. It was actually our second time to go there. The second time we went there, we went one afternoon, and that wasn't enough, and so we went back the next day and took lots of pictures, and I've been sharing with you some of these things that are relevant to us from the Bible. And what we've been looking at is we've been looking at how this museum supports what we read in the Bible, talking about real places, real people, real events, and giving us accurate descriptions of the things the Bible talks about. I want to remind you that that's not the goal of the British Museum. The British Museum does not say British Museum Bible Prover. It doesn't say that we're trying to encourage Christianity. That's not their goal. Their curator, most of the people that work there, they don't care. They're not believers. But they have inadvertently shown that the Bible is incredibly accurate. And I just want to keep you to keep that in mind about their perspective and their purpose. They're not trying to taint things to get people to believe what they believe. That's not their goal at all. I also want to point out some of the people have said that they went to the British Museum and they had no idea what they were looking at. And I totally can relate to that. I went there the first time and I knew some things I was looking for and it was really hard to find. But there was a whole lot more there I had no clue about. It was not until I went and got this book that was sold at the British Museum through the British Museum with the Bible. We've been studying this for 7 weeks, 7 months. And this is an invaluable book, but what I'd like to point out is they did not have through the British Museum with the Quran or through the British Museum with any other religious text. What you hold, this Bible, is unique. It is unlike any other book in the world, combining this religious approach with historical accuracy. There are other books that try to do history, but they don't have any foundation of truth. So we're going to look at a few things. In the last six lessons, we've been all focused on the Old Testament. We're going to shift our focus to the New Testament. And when we do that, there's a whole lot more of records that have been kept by the Greeks, by the Romans. So there's a lot more there. We're only going to have this in one lesson. We're going to look at a few people that, again, real people. If I were to ask you who the first president of the United States was, you would, everybody in here, I think, would know who the first president was. Who was the first governor of Colorado? That one, I probably wouldn't get anybody to raise their hand on. And in fact, I didn't look it up. I don't know, and there's a whole lot of others. You know, when you get to the top ones, you get those really famous ones, that's not that surprising. Well, when we go through this series, we start off with this guy. And so, yeah, he's mentioned in the Bible. We're not shocked at this. His name is Caesar Augustus. You've probably heard him. We have a month named after the guy, August. So that's Caesar Augustus. He is the Caesar that was alive when Jesus was born. So we have him recorded in Luke 2 and verse 1. And Luke, by the way, boy, he is spot on historically. He just nails the names and the places. He's amazing in that regard. But it says, "Now in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that a census be taken of all the inhabited earth." So we're not shocked that somebody would know. It's like saying if anybody knew about George Washington. But we're going to get more. We actually, the Bible names three Caesars, and we find all of them in the historical accounts, and we find them in the British Museum. So that's the marble version then of Caesar Augustus. This one's actually kind of interesting because that's a bronze with stone and glass eyes. You can tell the eyes are very different. This was actually found in the land of Cush by the people that stole it. They put it underneath their temple on the steps, so you had to step on Caesar to go worship because they were mocking him. And inadvertently, they made it so that 2,000 years later it was preserved. I bet they would not have been pleased to know that. Anyway, okay, so then Caesar Augustus's wife, never mentioned the Bible, but this is Livia. And the reason why we bring up Livia is because there's some history you might be familiar with. You're probably aware of Cleopatra. Everybody's heard about Cleopatra, but they don't really know where she fits into things. Cleopatra is right at the beginning of the New Testament. What happens is Cleopatra is down in Egypt, and everybody just loves Cleopatra. She's just an amazingly beautiful woman, and she's got the attention of Rome, and she terrifies Herod the Great. And so we have this whole long process that begins. Well, Livia doesn't like Cleopatra so much. So Cleopatra wears her hair one way. Livia changes the way she wears her hair. And so she gets to start braiding her hair in all this very elaborate way. And I don't know if you can see this entirely, but I mean, you can see that the lines are going this way over here, different way over here. I have no idea what that line is over here. Clearly, there's something going on over here. We have braiding over here, braids that go around and wrap around this. I have braided before. I can't do that. That's expert level braiding. And she did that, according to this book, she did that in response to Cleopatra. But what's interesting about it is she began a trend. And so now everybody wants to be like Livia. She is the queen for a long time. And so they want to be like Livia. And so this became the thing that everybody does. And that gets us to the New Testament writings. This is the sort of thing that Paul's talking about and Peter's talking about. He talks about modest apparel. We today always talk about modest apparel, and we're talking about bikinis. That's not what they were focused on. They're focused on the hair. Not to say that we should wear bikinis, but I'm saying that that's the focus, is it's talking about the braiding of hair. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments. When it says that, we're not talking about a simple braid. We're talking about something like this, where it takes an artist to accomplish it, where it is all about who you are, is all about what your hair looks like. So she is not Cleopatra, because she's done her hair like this. And now she's Livia, and everybody now wants to be like Livia, and Paul and Peter are saying, no, you need to be based on who you are, not based on how your hair is dressed up. Peter's same thing, 1 Peter 3, verses 3 through 4, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. When those things are written, this is the sort of thing they're thinking about. Okay, so then this is Tiberius. So we now have two of our Caesars that are named in the Bible, and we find pictures of them. Tiberius then is the Caesar during most of Jesus' life. So we're talking about Jesus, when Jesus' ministry is going on, this is the Caesar. So then Luke again, there he is, Luke 3 verse 1. Now in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, and look at all these names he throws in here. When Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, and Herod was tetrarch of Galilee, with his brother Philip was tetrarch of region of Iturea and Trachonitis, and Lysanias was tetrarch of Abilene. Luke kind of wants you to know he knows what time period he's talking about. And then we find some of those names. Okay, so if that is Tiberius, and if you were curious, that is the guy we know as Nero. He's never actually mentioned in the Bible, possibly referred to in the Bible. Definitely depends on your interpretation of the book of Revelation, but that's what Nero looks like. I'll come back to a coin later on. Okay, so now let's talk about some coins. And this is where we actually get our third one. I didn't get the statue of Claudius, Caesar Claudius. But he's this little hard figure to see in the middle, so we still have him. Yes, the Bible mentions Caesar Claudius. We got a coin that has him. And we're going to talk about a few coins now. So this one has a picture of Caesar Claudius being coronated by two guys named Herod. And the one on the right is, I think it's talking about this one. I know that's Claudius. I never found which one was which, but I'm pretty sure that one is Herod Agrippa, who's never mentioned as Herod Agrippa in the Bible, but in Acts chapter 12, it talks about Herod. That's the guy, this guy. He's the one who arrests James and has him killed. arrests Peter and intends to have him killed, but God releases Peter in Acts chapter 12, and then Herod goes up to Caesarea, and the people are crying out to him, "The voice of a God and not of a man," and it says that God struck him down, which, by the way, Josephus verifies that event. I'm not talking about that because we're not in the British Museum, but there we have that guy, Herod Agrippa, confirmed both from the Bible, Josephus, and coins as well. And then we have this one, which is Herod the Great. Again, not mentioned as Herod the Great in the Bible. That would be an odd thing for it to do because he wasn't so great in the Bible. But he's the one who is Herod when Jesus is born. So this is a coin of Herod the Great, the guy who said, "Let's go kill all the Jewish babies, all the boys." But confirmed. And then you have Pontius Pilate, which Luke chapter 3 and verse 1. We have actually a few things that talk about Pontius Pilate. But do you see how we just got well past George Washington and down into lower levels of government, which would quickly be forgotten, and yet the Bible still nails it because the Bible was written in their time period and was accurate. And so now we have Pontius Pilate, which is who Jesus stood before, and a coin regarding him. And then this one is a coin regarding Philip the Tetrarch. And I recognize that I've done things out of order as far as chronological order. This now goes back to the time of Herod the Great with Philip the Tetrarch. But Philip the Tetrarch is mentioned specifically in Luke 3 and verse 1. I don't know if you noticed that, but when we read Luke 3 and verse 1 about Tiberius is Luke 3 verse 1. Tiberius is mentioned, and then it mentioned Philip the Tetrarch. That's what he's called. He's also mentioned in other passages because he relates to John the Baptist. Philip has a wife who leaves him and goes marries someone else. And then John the Baptist comes and says, "You have no right to marry your brother's wife." And that is what leads to John the Baptist being killed. John the Baptist is killed because of this coin's wife. But he is clearly found within Scripture. And then we talk about events. So if you can perhaps read, there's going to be another one here. You can see this a little over here, Judea Capta. This is the Roman coins that comes after AD 70. So the Jews started making these coins and they put Hebrew on them, which you're not supposed to do. They were putting Hebrew on them because they were acts of defiance. We're going to have our own economy. We're going to rebel against Rome. Rome would not have anything to do with that, and so Rome comes down. It takes them 4 years, but they are able to utterly conquer Israel, Judea, destroy Jerusalem, destroy the temple, and when they do, they make their own coins. Anybody have a quarter? You know how in the back of the quarters, the modern quarters, you have the Colorado quarter, and you have the New Mexico quarter, and then you have the quarters that represent various national parks, right? They had that same idea a long time ago, only this was conquered your quarter. Judea Capta, Judea conquered. That was something that Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24 with his apostles. He said, "You see all these stones? They will not be on top of each other. They're all going to collapse." Jesus was the one who prophesied it. Here's the coins that said that's exactly what happened. And this is another one. So if you go to the British Museum, you won't find one of these coins. They're in different places, but they have multiples of these coins. This was something that they had several of. Then a little bit further on in the museum, what you'll find is these masks. These masks are not quite accurate because they are stone. But when the Bible ever talks about hypocrites, it's referring to something very similar to this. These are the masks that you would find outside of the theater. These were the dramatic masks, and they're stone representations of more of a cloth reality. The actors would put on masks like these, and then they would portray that character based on the mask. And so then the Bible, whenever it says you're being a hypocrite, is saying you're putting on a mask like this, and it's hiding who you really are underneath. So that gives us an image of what the Bible's talking about and what the New Testament readers thought when they ever saw the word hypocrites. And then we find these two African guys that are boxing, and that, I know that's not like a major thing, but if there was ever any question. So let me put it this way. Suppose you saw something in the Bible that talked about golf. that would kind of throw us off because golf didn't exist back then. But somebody who was just creating the Bible might not know that. And so they put golf in. But you have the Bible talking about boxing, and they nailed it because the boxing absolutely was something they had back then. In this particular case, it's showing two Africans that are boxing, and Paul makes mention of it in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 26. I box in such a way as not beating the air. Make your hits count. Control what you are doing. If you care at all, it makes mention of they're wearing special Roman gloves. Special Roman gloves have rocks in them. That's to make the punches count. It was to knock the person out, seriously. And then there's another thing you can find there, and that is, here you have a gladiator who is trained specifically for fighting animals. And so you have a lion that is attacking him from behind. What's interesting about that is Paul makes reference to something along those lines in his own case in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 32. If from human motives I fought with wild beasts at Ephesus, what does it profit me? If the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. Something that we only given a small little hint at, but at one point, Paul ended up in one of the arenas fighting animals, and he survived. And I would really love to know how that happened. My vision: the lions all fell asleep, but that's just my vision. So then, in another place, you have this, which is your first versions of a notebook. This is a writing tablet. And you can see that it's just made of wood, and you could put clay or something like that on there, and you could write on this. What's interesting about this is in Luke chapter 1, verse 63, when Zacharias can't speak, and he has a son that is born, and the question is, what's his name going to be? And everybody says, his name needs to be Zacharias, except for his mom, who said it should be John. They turn to Zacharias and say, what should his name be? And he says, he motions for something like this. Probably not a notebook, probably just one sheet. And then he scribbles on it, his name is John, and then boom, he can talk. But when it says, look for a writing tablet, think something like this. The particular Greek word for what this is the exact Greek word used in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 13, translated as, bring me the parchments. That's what he's asking for. Bring me the notebooks. I have use of them. So we see, again, more accuracy. Further on in the museum, you can find these two lead tablets, which have writing scribbled in on them, and you could probably read right down here that these lead tablets have a curse on them. So this was what they did. If you ever did something against somebody, they went over to their religious organization and they said, this person hurt me, so here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you some money. You write down something that says, they're going to pay for it, and then we will, typically they nailed them to a wall and then it's done. They're going to get it. In this particular case, it was bound and not nailed to a wall, but it was buried with some bones. But this was what they did. We don't curse people like this. They did. They cursed people all the time. Lots and lots of examples of curses. But keep this in mind then when you read Romans chapter 12. When it says, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. It's talking about this idea. We're supposed to write blessings. Say we want good things to happen to the people that persecute us, rather than writing down in stone, I'm seriously going to call upon the gods to smite you. That's what they did, not what we're supposed to do. Okay, so back to that one coin I was talking about. This is technically, I believe, a different one, but that is Tiberius, who was Caesar when Jesus was in his ministry, right? So in the British Museum, they have a coin that has the image of a Caesar on it. Do you remember the question that comes to Jesus in Matthew chapter 22? When they ask, whose taxes should we pay taxes or not? And Jesus says, give me a coin. That's what we're looking at. One of these coins. And he says, who's on there? Now it says Caesar, but we know who was Caesar at that time. It was a coin that would show Tiberius. And he uses that and says, okay, well then that's Tiberius's. Give to Tiberius what is Tiberius's. Give to God what is God's. And that was a fascinating comment. Now remember, the Bible and the British Museum, not friends. British Museum is not trying to prove the Bible. but they're not ignoring it either. Next to this guy, they have a sign that reads, "Coin from biblical times, Roman Empire, AD 14 to 37. Jews objected to having to pay taxes using coins that showed an image of the Roman emperor and referred to him as a god. The Bible reports that when Jesus was questioned about this, he was asked to see the coin, which he was probably one like this. He then replied, 'Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's.'" Do you know what they just did there? Did you see it? They just assumed Jesus was real. I don't know if you noticed that. He asked to see the coin, which was probably one like this. They're not saying myth. They know better than that. They know this is Jesus was real. And this event, here's what it would have looked like. Now, they're not going to go on and say Jesus is the Son of God, but they're not going to deny him. It's hard to deny that. Some people do sometimes, but they did not. Okay, so then we get another few coins. And if I understand this correctly, this is the same two sides of the same coin. So they have two coins, the same coin. They flipped one to show the other. And this particular one is a shekel that is from Tyre. And it turns out that the shekels which were from Tyre were on demand more than Roman shekels, because the ones from Tyre, for whatever reason, had more silver in them. And so at the temple, the priest demanded that you paid the temple tax with a Tyre shekel, because they wanted the full value of it. And because they demanded that, it required then that they had at the temple these things called money changers. Ever wondered why there were money changers? Now, where did I come up with this idea? Actually, it wasn't my idea. You just read the sign that's there in the British Museum. It says that these were coins used in Jerusalem. The temple in Jerusalem required every adult Jewish male to pay a half shekel in a tax. Tyrian shekels like these were preferred to the local Roman coinage, as they had a higher silver content. This is why money changers were operated at the temple, as referred to in the Bible. Isn't that interesting? Once again, they point out, the Bible's saying something, and here's why it's saying it, because it's accurate. These are not Bible believers. These are not great Christians that are writing this stuff. They just can't ignore it. The Bible's different. It's not like your other books. So that's not in the British Museum. That's in Athens. And that is a building you're probably familiar with. That's the Parthenon. And if you go to the British Museum, I highly recommend that you take some time aside from finding all these great biblical artifacts that we've been looking at. But there is a room to the side, and it is a large room. I'll show it to you in a second. But basically, this is in Athens. They took all the stuff that was inside this, and they took it over to the British Museum. And so they have a room that is essentially shaped like that. Here's this room, and you have all these people, and everything along here, this is all the stuff that was in there. And it has depictions of man fighting beasts and fighting gods and various wars between the gods. And it has a lot of stuff I can't show you because, well, I try to show you stuff with clothes on, and they don't. And so I'm not zooming in on that stuff. But as you walk along that, if you walk along there, you're basically doing what Paul did. Because in Acts, it talks about how Paul comes into Athens and he is observing all of their various gods. Now, maybe he didn't go up and maybe he didn't walk through here, but it sure sounds like he walked through all the stuff and was looking at it. And this was the thing to go look at, the great Parthenon. And so you can be like Paul and you can look and see at their great focus and then realize, but they don't know God because they have this other thing to the unknown God. So that's on the far end, and there's just a lot of stuff in there that you can go see. That brings us to an end of this series. I didn't actually get everything from the museum, so Bonnie and I have to go back. You know, I got to get everything, right? Got to collect them all. But do you get the idea here? Do you get the picture after these seven lessons? Somebody comes up to you sometime and they say, "Oh, you believe the Bible? That's nothing but a myth." Inwardly, laugh out loud. Okay, you can't inwardly laugh out loud, but do that. And then politely say, "Have you ever been to a museum?" Because it's really hard to say that you're right, the Bible's a bunch of myths, if you've gone to the museums and seen the truth behind it. Does it have everything in the Bible? No. But everything we can test is verified. And you know what else? We're finding new stuff all the time. They keep digging, they keep looking, they keep finding. And we haven't found the thing that says, hey, look, the Bible's wrong. We keep finding the things that say, hey, look, the Bible is right. We're not the crazy ones. We're the ones following the evidence that says the Bible is unlike any other religious textbook in the world. It's one that the museums show is true. So I thank you for your time and for your attention. I hope you'll understand that we have reason to believe in God. And it's not just because of this stuff in the museum. If we didn't have this, we should still believe in God. But this corroborates it. This gives us even more reason to believe. And I hope that it has caused you to have a greater, deeper faith that when you read something in the Bible, it's true. So what do you read in the Bible? Well, a lot of things. I read about Jesus. I read about the Son of God. I read about a sacrifice that's meant to save us of our sins. I read about a day of judgment. I read about a home in the future. One that is eternal and glorious. One that is darkness and horrible. And they are all true. So, will you follow Jesus and set your course for the path towards heaven? Or will you ignore him and ignore the evidence and bumble your way towards the path of hell? I thank you for your time and for your attention. If you're not a Christian, now's the time to become one. Say, I will follow Jesus. Be baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. If you're a Christian and you have fallen away, now's the time to come back and to fix it. We encourage you either way. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?